This is Luther Keith, Executive Director of Arise Detroit, the community coalition of churches, block clubs, and community groups working together to improve the quality of life for the residents of the city of Detroit. Today's podcast, we're going to focus on urban farming and farmers markets. In recent years, we've seen a lot of discussion about food deserts in urban communities, including Detroit. And while some Detroit neighborhoods have fine supermarkets, there are those that do not, and even where they are, sometimes accessing fresh food can be a challenge. So today, we're going to talk about urban farming, how to get involved in it, the impact it's having, how you can participate. And we have people, representatives of two organizations that have been engaged in this work for years, making a real significant difference in the food lives of Detroiters. And we have a young lady by the name of Naomi Cawthorn with Feed 'em Freedom, which is on the east side of Detroit. And we have Tipfira Rushton, who's co-director of Keep Growing Detroit. And she's been involved in this for a number of years as well. So to start this out, and I'll start with you, Naomi, why is having an organization or urban farmers markets, why is that important to the city of Detroit? And what kind of impact do you think you're having?
Wow, that's a beautiful question. It's important for several reasons. One, we're continuing a legacy of agriculture that's been in the city for a long time. So a lot of people who came up from the South fleeing the violence of the South brought with them agrarian histories and agricultural practices. And so we're continuing that lineage. And that's one important aspect. The other is that due to violence and racism, a lot of people don't have access to having a holistic relationship to the land. I mean, the violence of the slave trade and the hundreds of years of enslavement have left people with a lot of historical trauma that makes us want to resist connecting to the land. And when we resist our relationship with the land and our inherent connection to the land, we're also resisting each other in a lot of ways. We're existing like our traditional ways of being. And so something seemingly simple as planting a plant and watching it grow can be bare minimum it can feed you, which is already powerful enough.
Right, right.
And at its greatest impact, it's very healing of historical trauma, and it has the capacity to impact the way we organize and we think about our political futures.
And we'll talk more about that. Tipfira, tell us about what Keep Growing Detroit attempts to do, the impact it's had, and why you think it's important that you're on the landscape, tilling the land, so to speak.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. I couldn't agree with Naomi more in terms of reconnecting folks to land. That's a very important point. Keep Growing Detroit is a nonprofit in the city of Detroit. We support gardeners in all aspects, from developing their garden, purchasing their land, seeds and plants and resources for their garden. We also operate a 1-acre farm in the Eastern Market District, which does serve as an educational farm, so folks can come work alongside our farmers to understand the different plant cycles and what it takes to get an urban farm going.
And Naomi, can you share with us a little more specifically about the type of activities that you're engaging with Feed 'em Freedom?
Feed 'em Freedom was started by Baba Wayne and Mama Myrtle Curtis. And the heart is really getting at that food is a pathway to, can be a pathway to our collective organizing and to political liberation and to really shaping the ways that we can speak to each other, the ways that we can be in caring relationship to all things. So the way that that happens is not only planting, our kale looks awesome all the time. The collards are always popping.
You're on Manistique on the east side, right?
Yes, on Manistique. I believe it's 6 lots on the east side, and then across the street on the west side of the street, there's another 3 or 4 lots where we have the Fox Creek Pavilion. And so we're growing food, lots of traditional crops that are traditional to African-American lineage.
What kind of crops?
Crowder peas, collard greens, watermelon, sugar baby watermelon, to be precise, because these are heirloom crops. And heirloom crops have been saved. The seed is saved generation to generation. So these are crops that we can trace the lineage to, at the least, to the southern part of the United States.
And what kind of crops are you doing with Keep Growing Detroit? Does Keep Growing Detroit occupy a specific space? Are you all over the city or what?
So our main farm site is in the Eastern Market District, right kind of behind the market. So we love to have folks out. We have community hours where you can definitely come and join us. We are growing a little bit of everything. We're really market focused, so want to have a little bit of everything to be a backbone to support some of the growers in the city that are going to market. So in addition to the garden resources that we provide, we also provide a pathway to the market through a program called the Grown in Detroit program. So we provide a staff person to be at the table each week, and we help a cooperative of growers to establish prices together and share their goods at market. And so in order to provide that backbone, we pretty much grow at least 30 different varieties of food, all different kind of herbs, lavender, thyme, oregano. We also grow native plants. So we're also growing the transplants in our greenhouse. So we do transplant production of annual crops and native crops and perennial crops. We run the gamut, raspberries, asparagus, collards, greens,
and
kale,
I was thinking
greens,
that
lettuces.
I don't think I've seen oregano outside of a supermarket.
First of all, you got to smell it, and then you'll just know that that is what it is.
What about the Detroit's climate, though? Northern climate like this, is it good for growing vegetables in terms of dealing with the seasons? Now, right now, of course, we're in the fall, and I think we still are a bit in time to talk about the harvest season and looking into spring when you have to get your crops ready. But talk about from a climate standpoint, are there foods that are really good? I talked to a gentleman today who said he's growing potatoes. I didn't know you could grow potatoes in your backyard in Michigan, but talk a little bit about the climate. How does that play into what you decide to grow?
Yeah, I mean, potatoes, sweet potatoes, pretty much grow everything except for tropical plants here. And you could even do that if you have the right protection. So there's some people trying some cool experiments with some things, with some fruit varieties and things like that. But yeah, we have a shorter season. Obviously, we're in Michigan. We have a shorter growing season than like California or something like that. But Michigan has the most diversity of crops pretty much in the United States. So we have a variance of soils, and we have all kind of things that we can grow right here. And then our growers are really innovative in that we have different ways of extending the season, either through those hoop houses that you may see throughout the city. Sometimes you see them in neighborhoods, the large plastic structures that provide additional heat and sun for the plants to grow a little bit longer in this early spring and late fall. And then there's all kind of things that you can do to cover up your plants and keep them warm. So we have a really large variety of things that we could grow in Michigan. We do have to be mindful of the seasons. And I think that's some of the beautiful part, as Naomi was saying, like really understanding the seasonality. We can't just always go to the grocery store and get exactly what we want. You know what I mean? Like, that is how conventional industrial agriculture leads us to believe that anything is always available, right? Very consumer driven. When you step into urban farming and you really see, okay, here's the time period in which I could have okra. Here's the time period in which I can have squash. You know what I mean? It really puts you more in tune with the natural flow of food systems.
Let's talk about the connection between urban farming and farmers markets. If I'm growing squash or tomatoes in my backyard, does that make me an urban farmer or just somebody who is growing vegetables in the backyard? What's the difference between urban farming and connected to farmers markets? Are they interchangeable? Are they different? How do you make those distinctions?
Well, I think Tip Fair is good to talk about how growers on a smaller scale can get to market, because that's definitely their specialty. But I definitely want to touch on this question of, like, does that make you a farmer if you're growing something in your backyard? And that's something I think about a lot, actually, probably a little too much. But what is this idea of a farmer? And I like to tell people I'm a farmer because the way that we have been taught, the stereotype of farmers, does not match me. When they look at me,
what is a stereotype?
A stereotype of a farmer in the United States would be a white man, 50 and up, chewing on a piece of straw with a hat on and overalls with a flannel driving a tractor. Is it not?
I've seen that a lot.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's how we think about farming, and we think about farming on this large scale that requires lots of machinery, that requires you to plant a lot of the same thing, and it requires this type of life. You need to have a barn, or you need to have a small family, and it really is driven and tied into this concept of the American dream and settler colonialism generally. But the farming, the idea of farming in your yard, you can totally identify as a farmer. I also like to use grower. I like to use gardener. I like to use steward, someone who cares for plants. Yeah. And so if you're growing plants, you're all of those things.
This is a really fascinating subject because the more you talk, the more questions come to mind. One question is, if I'm doing like a real urban farm, do I have to get city permits and licensing? Where does that play into all of this?
Yeah, you know, Detroit has an interesting history of disinvestment that has led us to have a 30% vacancy rate in the city, right? And so many people, particularly 10, 15 years ago, they're living on a block and there's an empty lot and they just go and grow on it. You know, yeah, I might call that guerrilla gardening, right? They just go and grow. They don't necessarily care who owns it.
Right.
And that totally, there's still people who do that. And I think definitely now that Detroit is starting to see a little more investment in its neighborhoods, I've had situations where people did that and then they didn't have the proper like paperwork that went with their land. Their crops were destroyed. Like somebody purchased it right from under them. I've had many cases like that. It's very heartbreaking.
So you have to own the land.
I mean, you don't have to.
unless but, you want to run into an issue, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I would say if you're not going to own the land, really be thoughtful about the amount of investment that you're putting in their property, right? So, like, you don't want to spend thousands and thousands of dollars and end up somebody purchases it from under you, right? But if you are wanting to put more investment in the land, I definitely encourage people to own the property. One of the projects that I'm working really closely with is the Detroit Black Farmer Land Fund to make sure that particularly Black farmers who have been unequally disinvested in, I would say. So it's traditionally been easier for white farmers to purchase property in the city. One of the programs that we're doing is to support Black farmers with the capital that they need and also that technical assistance to walk through the system. How do I actually do this? What paperwork do I actually fill? Who do I talk to? All of those things that take time and effort and things that's something that we support gardeners with.
That is a perfect lead into my next question. So Luther Keith don't know nothing about growing nothing.
Okay.
I got a vacant lot that I own.
Uh-huh.
This urban farming thing sounds really cool. I've never planted anything. How do I get started? Walk me through ABC. What do I need to know and do? And how do I learn about what to plant?
Yeah. So first, I like to encourage folks who want to get into gardening to reframe the thinking, right? Like, you actually do know how to tend life. You care for yourself daily. You know that if you're thirsty, it's time to drink. If you're hungry, it's time to eat. You know how to monitor changes and things. You know if something's wet or dry. So you have actually a lot of tools that you need and that you use and cultivate in the process of growing food. So I always love to encourage people to say, like, your toolbox is not empty.
Okay.
If you're interested,
okay.
You know. A good place to start, there's a really incredible book that I often recommend called Farming While Black by Leah Penniman. And that's a great starting book that kind of walks you through how to know which seeds to choose based on your, we call it your growing zone or your climate zone, how to know which seeds to choose, when to plant them, what type of medium do you plant them in, how do you make the soil to plant them in. And so that's one way to go through books. There's also lots of classes, which Tafira, I'm sure, can touch on. And we have an incredible community here. So you could come to a place like Feed 'em Freedom and volunteer regularly and learn. Ask me a million questions. I'm sure I have 80% of the answers for you of what you want to know on the soil.
Well, how much did you know before you got involved with Feed 'em Freedom?
I've been growing for about 7 years. And I got involved with Feed 'em Freedom because I was invited by someone. I was already working on a farm, and they were like, oh, I also go here on the weekends. And so I went, and I met Mama Myrtle, and I met all the volunteers there, and I was like, this is excellent. I love it. Because we're not only growing the food, we're also thinking critically about our relationships. We do programming with youth. They do have a Jefferson Chalmers Farmers Market that's based there. All types of arts and cultural events happen at the farm as a site of gathering. And so that was really refreshing to me.
Mm-hmm. I love everything that Naomi said, and I would add, particularly in our urban environments, we want to be doing soil testing. So that's always my first step. It's like, I'm always like, okay, wait. First of all, figure out who owns the property so you know what you're getting into. Does the land bank own it? Does the private owner? You say you own it. So you have site control over the space. Definitely want to conduct some soil testing. That's something that Keep Growing Detroit
does. Okay, can I stop you right there for a moment?
Sure.
What is soil testing? What is good soil for growing and what is bad soil for growing?
Okay, great question. So there are chemical properties of the soil that we want to be mindful of, right? There's like organic matter that you have in there, pH and all of that. But the biggest thing that we want to be aware of in urban environments is the lead contamination in soil. Okay. So, you know, God forbid the other heavy metals that are also active in soils. So first off, I tell people kind of understand the history of the property that you're growing, both a long-term history, what is the indigenous history of the land, just out of respect for the neighborhood. And then also, was there ever like a commercial property?
How do you soil test? Who do you get? Do you call Michigan State Agricultural?
Yeah, Key Growing Detroit does soil testing. Okay. MSU does soil testing. The thing is, you want to make sure that they're testing for lead in the soil if you're going to grow on commercial property, which means there used to be, could be in a gas station, could have been whatever. If you're going to grow on commercial property, you want to get a more extensive test for heavier metals. But if you're growing in a residential area, we're pretty sure there's just been a house there. The biggest thing that we're concerned about is lead in the soil from the lead-based paints and the lead-based petroleum that we used back in the day. And so we can come out and test that soil. We have guides on how to do that. We send it off to a laboratory who looks in the soil to see what is the lead makeup of the soil, and then we make recommendations based on that. So that's a one step, just because we want to make sure that we're not harming ourselves in the process of dealing with urban soils.
So obviously soil testing is very important. Own the land, test the soil. Let's talk about getting people to help you. I mean, where do you get your personnel from? Or do you guys write grants for funding? Is this all in-kind contributions? I know you said to Naomi that you're a volunteer. How do you pull together your team to get this stuff done?
That's a great question. Naomi probably knows a lot about that. And I also just would add that I always tell people, like, don't have the mentality like build it and they will come. Like, start with the community that you want to grow. Like, involve them as much as possible from the rooter to the tutor. So, like, I started and planned a community garden on the Lower East Side. And before I even put anything in the ground, I was talking to the neighbors about my plans, because you never know how the neighborhood is looking at that lot. There may be young folks who are using it as a basketball court. There may be people who are cutting through there to the liquor store. There's an existing use of the space, and you need to like recognize that and talk to the neighbors about it. What do they want to see? What do they envision? So really having your community intact before you do it, because there's a lot of community gardens that are one man shows, honestly, and that is burnout. You know what I'm saying? I would start with the community. Is it your church community? Is it your block club? Who are the people that you're going to be reaching out to, and like start talking to them and engaging them at the very beginning? You know what I mean?
And then in those conversations, like creating a shared vision, right? It's not so much like, this is what I want, do you agree with me? But like, this is what I'm thinking. How can we create a vision of something that we'll want to maintain together?
After this, being a senior person in this conversation, I'm going to ask Naomi, who's a couple years junior to me, I would say, is this a thing for just old folks, or are young folks doing? Are millennials doing this? Are they interested in growing, or are they just interested in listening to the latest thing in music? How do you get to slow down and work the land? Is that something that you can find young people who want to do?
Absolutely. Yeah.
How do you do that?
There are a lot of us already that are really interested in it. And I count people interested in growing plants, the whole house plant movement, I would say. It counts. It counts as an interest in wanting to connect to the land, connect to folks around you. So there's a lot of interest right now. And it's, I think a lot of us have it innately in us. Hey. And it's just tapping into the ways that people can engage that feel best for them, right? So even for our older community or for folks who are physically limited, there are still activities and ways to involve them in the garden that may not be physical, because gardening, like I've been saying, right, like working the land and working with food isn't just about tending the land itself. It's also about the relationship. So there's a role for everyone because it's community-based work.
And I was interested in the legacy component of, because as you indicated, parents, grandparents might be familiar with working the land. I mean, most have had roots. I have roots. My family had farms in Tennessee where we got up here. So there is that legacy component. Do you see older people then wanting to share that legacy of the land and planting and growing with the younger generation?
Yeah, I've experienced that myself. And in this work, there's like Mama Myrtle and Baba Wayne, they've definitely been guides and elders in my work, and other community members have been really supportive in kind of nurturing me in this journey. And so it's definitely something that is collaborative and intergenerational.
Give me three plants that are great to start with, and give me three or less that leave them alone if you're starting out with.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So I'd say things that are really fun and exciting for folks who are just getting started include baby greens.
Baby greens.
Yeah, so lettuce, like a lettuce mix, like, you know, you get it in a bag, you can grow it. And those are technically babies. So if you separated them, they'd get really big. But you can grow baby greens because it's really forgiving with the spacing. They come up really fast, so you get lots of satisfaction. So lettuce, spinach. Now, I would recommend doing this in a very clean, weed-free bed. If you're planting straight into grassy soil, I'd say plant a tree or a bush, something that's still going to be able to survive but isn't fighting. And things that are challenging to start with, I'd say carrots always make the list. Even though I love carrots, they take a long time before you get the satisfaction.
So that was actually the first thing I tried, carrots and beets. Yes. Why did I try that first? I didn't grow up with a green thumb.
Yes.
There. I grew up like in the city and I tried carrots. I just threw them out there and they never came up. And I'm like, why didn't they come up? And I felt very discouraged. So I agree with that.
Yes. It's because they take so long and they need a lot of care when they're young. But baby greens, I'd also say something like tomato. Even though it has its own challenges, it can teach you a lot about the relationship with plants. They're quite forgiving.
When I've eaten tomato directly out of the garden, the taste is so different. I can't even explain the difference, but it's just something so fresh and crisp, almost sweet about it, as opposed to something you might get in the grocery store. But what about your growing stuff? Is it just a matter of like watering grass or water? Or do you have to have first organic type of things that you have to put in? If you're doing a urban farm or urban garden, are there special things you need to have?
It depends. I think the soil tests will give you a lot of answers. But there are already pre-mixes. There's lots of growing stores around. I would always tend towards, and I'm sure would as well, recommending to buy organic potting soil and organic amendments.
And where can you get all that stuff?
Like Lowe's or a Home Depot, an Ace. I personally, because I know exactly what I'm looking for, there are a lot of indoor growing stores that I go to, and they have lots of specific amendments. So that's anything that you would use to support specifically the fruiting phase of something or the leafing phase of something. And that gets a little more technical. But the people in those stores that are specifically made for plant growing are usually very supportive. And if you ask them a few questions, they can direct you to the right product.
What has given you the greatest satisfaction about doing what you do? Is it seeing the plants grow? Is it seeing the reaction of people? Somebody coming back and telling you, I bought some squash at your market and it was great. Where do you get your joy from this type of work?
Gotten a lot of joy over the years with this kind of work. I think one thing that comes to mind for me is there's a big aspect of self-determination in gardening. And like the story that I always remember about joy was like, I mentioned that I started a community garden and went out and talked to all the kids in the neighborhood. What do you want to see? Where do you want the bench? Where do you want the tomatoes? Like we mapped it out together. And then I watched these kids who were living in a neighborhood that was in decline, right? So they saw dumping, they saw abandoned houses. They didn't really have a lot of opportunities to input into their environment. And we planned it out and then they saw it come to life. Their interaction in that was just like, for me, a lesson in like, you have the power to do this, to be able to see that and to be able to see the joy on their faces as they engaged in that space. And then they ate the vegetables. Like that was like that first year for me was like my biggest joy.
That is really something because I don't think it's a misnomer to say that some people really don't understand that you actually can grow your own food because we, you know, you go to markets and everything's there and sometimes it's convenient, but you actually can grow your own food.
And you can shape your environment. That is a big piece too because it's like some of the neighborhoods that we're living in, there's this imposition on you of the environment. There's, like I said, there's dumping, there's glass all around, like, and to take control over that. And to say, okay, I can beautify this space. Like with the work with Arise Detroit, right? I can clean up this space. I don't have to wait for government. Having some self-determination is like, just, it's like a beautiful piece of this work.
Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that was really healing for me is just like, I can kind of put blinders on and look down and see that there's like all these weeds. And if I look down the row and it's like, oh my gosh, very intimidating how much work I have to do. But then I just like do one thing at a time. And then I look back and I can see that I've made a difference in the world. Like it actually, my efforts, my focus, my energy changes the world externally. And so that that was like a really powerful lesson for me. And that's something that still brings me joy is like I see people learning a similar lesson. The thing that brings me joy also is when people like have this realization like, oh, wow, this is really everything. Like working with the land is really about culture. It's about our health. It's about our history. It's about our future. It's about everything. Like it's right here.
Yeah, I get the sense that, number one, this is very connected market in terms of urban farming. People who do this type of work, I imagine you guys know each other and know a lot of the people in gang in this environment. So it seems to be a very supportive. All of you know a secret that other folks don't know.
You know? We're all connected.
Yeah. And so, which leads me to a last question as we go into the wrap-up phase here. What's next for Detroit in terms of urban farming, gardening, that seems to be out there. What is the next phase, or we just continue to do, or is there a next phase or next level that you would like to see us get as a community as it relates to urban farming, farmers markets, that whole milieu of things? Is there a next phase that makes sense, or maybe we're still working on it?
I mean, for me, I'm always pushing for the city in all its aspects to really embrace this movement as a positive thing for the city. And I feel like we do when we're on the spokes piece, right? Like we have tours and we bring officials through. But when it comes down to policy, there's some really limiting policy in place for urban gardeners that I am definitely advocating and working through with city officials. And like, don't get me wrong, like there's some really good people inside the city that are supporting this work. But as a whole, we haven't really embraced it as a city, as a really integral part of how we redevelop our city, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and so for me, that would be like, you know, that would be the aha moment for me,
right.
When we embrace it and we support it through policy.
Mm-hmm. Naomi, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with that. And then I think what can come from that step, the vision that I would just love to see for this city is more connection of growing food on the land to the whole food system, right? Like there's so many places in the city that only have processed food available or only have quick food available, and there's not a lot of nutritionally dense, culturally relevant, fresh food available. And so it's like, how do we connect all these things together into a system that is self-determined, that speaks from the residents and their needs, and is also like systematized. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like where we're building to through Keep Growing Detroit and the Garden Resource Program, creating these networks, training people so that they can train more people so that we can keep building, and grocery programs like the Detroit People's Food Co-op, like Neighborhood Grocery in Jefferson Chalmers, smaller grocery stores that can also support the kind of aggregation of this food so that we can disseminate it to as many people as possible.
Folks want to learn more about Feed 'em Freedom. How can they do that?
They can visit our Facebook, and they can also come to visit us at the garden. We have volunteer days.
And where is the garden?
Manistique and Jefferson, just one block in on the left. You'll see us. And
what days?
On Saturdays from 10 to 1, we have volunteer days. I don't know how long we're going to go through the season. I think we only have a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. But then we'll come back and you can see on the...
T, what about Keep Growing Detroit?
Sure, yeah. KeepGrowingDetroit.com is our website. We're also on Facebook and Instagram. And you can always reach out to me, TEE at KeepGrowingDetroit.org. Would love to connect with you.
You guys got me fired up. I'm going to go out and get me a straw hat and go to work. Again, you've been listening to the Rise Detroit Neighborhood Transformers podcast. Again, we want to thank Naomi Cawthorn of Feed 'em Freedom and Tapir Rushton with Keep Growing Detroit. If you like this podcast, let us know. Email us at info@arisedetroit.org, info@arisedetroit.org. Or are there other topics that you would like to hear as part of this podcast? Let us know. As we say in Arise Detroit, be part of the change. Thank you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.